This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to Place to Be Nation's NBA Team Podcast. I know we were out previous week, but I'm glad that y'all are back. I hope you enjoyed the Final Four, the NCAA Tournament, the championship game on Saturday and Monday at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. But it's back to the big boys. It's back to the professionals. And we're back with our professional analysts on Place to Be Nation when it comes to everything hoops. And it's me, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by Adam Murray, who's got a little bit of a scratchy voice, but I think we're going to get through it and try to man up.
Yeah, hopefully I can hold out. So I'll give my best. That's all
I can do. Is this 97 Jordan 38 points ish type of a performance?
Well, right now I'm just working on Brian Pillman and just, hey guys, how's it going? Four Horsemen, baby.
are you a loose cannon in the house?
let's hope not. We're gonna have a nice respectful conversation today. We're not gonna go crazy. Let's talk about some positivity this week.
Yeah, we're going to try to stay on the good things about what's going on with some of the teams that are contending for playoff spots, because in the West, there are a lot of clinches that we've already seen with, obviously, the Golden State Warriors, the San Antonio Spurs, who had their 50 win season, I think, for the 15th year in a row, which is unbelievable. We had a clinch from the Houston Rockets, the Memphis Grizzlies. Portland Trail Blazers clinched the Northwest Division for the first time since 1999. The LA Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs, like I just mentioned, the only ones that are kind of held out in the West that have not clinched so far. The Dallas Mavericks, who I would predict are going to be clinching very soon. And then we have that dogfight between the Oklahoma City Thunder and my New Orleans Pelicans, who, as of this recording, are one half game behind Oklahoma City for that last spot. The Phoenix Suns are
done.
They're dropped out. They're four games out of the eighth spot. They're three and a half games away from New Orleans. It seems like New Orleans has had more wins than Phoenix. And that one, I don't know if you watched it, but on TNT, the late game of the doubleheader, they had a game against Golden State where they almost got a win in Golden State, where nobody ever wins against the Warriors. And Harrison Barnes got a very, very late offensive putback to win the game. So did you watch any of that one?
No, I didn't see. But where did I thought New Orleans was done? They were just injured, another injury. Somebody else is out. How did they battle back all of a sudden?
My opinion, Tyreke Evans has played really, really well for pretty much since past the All-Star break, and Eric Gordon has been playing his best basketball at this point. Omer Asik has been healthy. He hasn't missed as many games. Ryan Anderson came back, even though I don't think he's had as much of an impact on the team so far in the last week or so as he has had in previous months. And then obviously Davis, who came back from his litany of injuries that he's, it's not like major injuries. It's not like a Sam Bowie thing. It's more like nicks and knacks.
Yeah. It's the end of season stuff.
Yeah, shoulder injury here, shoulder injury there, an ankle issue that he has suffered during shoot around. And now they're winning, like I said, they're winning more games than they're losing. They're still dropping a game here, dropping a game there. But, you know, the thing with the Thunder is that with all the talk about Russell Westbrook and the incredible year he's had, and he has had an incredible year, is that they're not winning every game. In fact, the last 10 games they've been 5-5. You know, which is, and the same thing goes for the New Orleans Pelicans. And the problem is that the Thunder have been very, very streaky, just like Westbrook has.
Well, the thing about Westbrook is everyone's like, oh, he's doing great. He's doing triple doubles. But he still has 8 turnovers a game. And you watch any of it, it's just him by himself. Mm-hmm. He's going into full Kobe mode. And you can't, I can see how they're going 5-5 because he is not, there's no team cohesion there.
No. Enes Kanter's numbers have been really good. But it's because they've been running off tempo. Dave Jaeger said, the Memphis Grizzlies head coach, said that the way that they game plan, since they realized that Durant wasn't coming back, and then when Ibaka, who may or may not be back from his injury, that they're playing a lot of run and gun, kind of like Steve Nash with the Suns under D'Antoni. So they're playing a lot faster than they used to. Their defense has definitely suffered, though. They played a Dallas Mavericks team that had a terrible defense, and they lost. And with Russ, it's just his numbers are great. But like you said, I think a good comparison, like you said, is Kobe. I remember when Kobe filled in for Shaq in 2003, and he had great individual numbers, but the team wasn't doing well. They needed Shaq there in order to stabilize the team. The Thunder don't have that because all they have is Russ, and then after that you've got all these bench guys. You got the trade that they made with Kyle Singler and Enes Kanter and I'm forgetting some of the other ones, DJ Augustin, and they've contributed, but they haven't really been difference makers.
Yeah, because it's kind of hard when your team really changes their style after you get all these guys. So yeah. Really nobody is on the same page at all.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that's a huge problem there. That's in the West. Now, look, we're trying to like judge Oklahoma City like they're like compared to the bottom of the East, which is not fair because they're 8 games over .500. If they were in the East, they would be like a 4 seed or a 5 seed. New Orleans is right behind them. They're having the best year that they've had since 2011. I do think that Monty Williams, his job is on the line here, and I think that the team knows that and they're actually playing for him because they want to reach the playoffs. I think they're tired of not making it. The East, though, is interesting, even though the teams are not as good as the ones that are in the bottom of the West competing. One of your teams is in that running. That's the Boston Celtics. They've played very, very well over the last 2 weeks. They got a bit of a surprise with the addition of Jared Sullinger, who a lot of people thought was going to get shut down for the season. Was a stretch fracture. He's back. Isaiah Thomas is playing very well. Evan Turner has had 2 triple-doubles. And Kelly Olynyk, even though he's got a huge shiner on his eye, he's been playing very well. They did drop a game over the weekend to the Milwaukee Bucks. You actually went to the formerly known as the Fleet Center, the TD Garden, to go see them. What's the difference do you see between the Celtics win? They had Rondo and Jeff Green, or maybe even right after that deal, and how you see them now?
Completely different team. This team is just full of overachievers now. Rondo is playing. It's like, okay, they have talent. They're making too many extra passes. And now it's just like they got down. Like Milwaukee, I was like amazed. Like they just, in the third quarter, turn it on. Like OJ Mayo and Ilyasova just like hit like threes like back to back to back to back. It's like, where did that come from?
Do you think that's a byproduct of the fact that they're one of the youngest teams that are in the playoff contention? Because it shows how inconsistent they are. They look great at one point, and then they look terrible another.
No, because don't forget, you also and everybody else said they're going to be horrible this year. So they didn't expect to be .500 right now.
Yeah, they're playing with house money.
Yeah, so, they're supposed to be, what, let's say, 18-58 right now if they were lucky.
Yeah, and they're playing without Jabari Parker.
Yeah, they're completely in, just there's no all-star on the team. Each day somebody else is stepping up and hitting shots, and Chris Middleton one day, John Henson, and then OJ Mayo, Giannis, and it's just like, where Jason Kidd has turned that team around, I think.
Yeah, and Jason Kidd is helping out Michael Carter-Williams in the same way that he helped out Brandon Knight. It's unfair to compare the two in terms of their performance since the trade deadline when they made that deal between Phoenix and Milwaukee, because Knight has had ankle problems in Phoenix, so he hasn't really gotten acclimated to the way Phoenix plays. So I don't think that's a fair comparison yet. I think we're going to know a lot more by the time we get midway through next season. But Carter Williams has done better over the last week than he did when he first got there. When he first got there, he was like a deer in headlights. He did not know what to do.
Well, and yeah.
They
were 0-10. Like, you look at the schedule, like, where are they going to win again? Okay, they can fall out of the playoffs. They look terrible. And then it's just like, okay, now, they're starting to get it. And they're a team, they're a surprisingly fun team to watch.
Yeah, they don't move the ball a lot in terms of, pace, but defensively they're good. They're really good at causing takeaways, which means that they take a lot of chances on defense, kind of like the Miami Heat did when LeBron was there. They still do it in Miami, but not as much as when LeBron was there, where they kind of they like to hedge all the screens, they like to double team, and they try to speed you up on the offensive end so that they could get turnovers and try to get runouts, even though they don't take the turnovers and run really fast all the time. It's a little bit of an inconsistent team. We both love the Greek Freak Giannis Antetokounmpo. You got John Henson, like you mentioned. Chris Middleton is the leading scorer at 14 points a game, which is crazy for a playoff team. But they've kind of stabilized at 500. I think they're kind of set at that sixth spot. And if they're set at the sixth spot and Chicago can't catch Cleveland, I think that's going to be your matchup there between the Bulls and the Bucks. But that's the sixth seed. It's after Milwaukee that things get a little bit crazy with the Eastern Conference. Now, the thing that gets interesting about this is we don't know how dangerous some of these teams are because at their best, they've looked good, but their overall body of work has been so bad. Like, I'll give you one example, the Brooklyn Nets. You know, you've watched a little bit more Brooklyn than I did earlier in the year, and they did not look good at all.
No, they did not look like they wanted to play at all. They were just five players collecting a paycheck, and now, you know, you freed some things up. Thaddeus Young brings in some energy, and really the health of Brook Lopez. He's now back to being dominant.
He was the player of the week in the Eastern Conference. He was fantastic. I think he's averaged 27 points over the last few games, a double-double machine all over again. Deron Williams has found the fountain of youth somehow in the last about 3 or 4 weeks. To my surprise, Joe Johnson, he's not having the year he had last year, but he's not been terrible. And I don't want to say that Thaddeus Young for Kevin Garnett was like, I don't want to necessarily say Brooklyn got the better end of that deal, but Thaddeus Young does provide things on the defensive end and in terms of size and versatility that Garnett just could not provide anymore.
Well, Garnett hasn't played. He played like two games since he came back.
Yeah.
He's been like shut down due to ankle injuries. So the fact that
it's weird because his mentor was Sam Mitchell in Minnesota, and now he's kind of in the role Sam Mitchell was in when Garnett got there. Now he's kind of like a mentor for guys like Zach LaVine and Gorgie Jang and Andrew Wiggins. And it's a little odd there, but you're going back to Brooklyn.
Going back to Brooklyn, it's just they've I don't want to say hit their stride late and realize, like, you know, because I think we always figured they will be in the playoffs at the end because they have all that veteran experience. Yeah. Do we expect them to really take out Cleveland or Chicago or Toronto? Not really, but
can they be competitive though? Can they be because we said the same thing about Atlanta when they were the 8th seed last year and they played Indiana. And we were like, oh, this is going to be easy. The Hawks were a losing team. Well, the Hawks gave them all the Indiana Pacers could handle. Now, Indiana sort of helped them out by not playing well down the stretch. I don't think we can really say that about any of the three teams that are at the top of the East, Cleveland, Chicago, and Atlanta. They're all playing well. But in this case, you never, ever know. You know, could Brooklyn be a team that gives trouble to like a Cleveland if they get the seventh spot? Maybe. I think a lot of people are sort of the media executives are sort of twiddling their thumbs, hoping that they get the Miami-Cleveland matchup just because of all the thing behind Dwayne Wade. And I don't know if you noticed, but Dwayne Wade had two spectacular games against the Miami Heat at American Airlines Arena.
Yeah, but then as we expect with Dwayne Wade, his body fell apart again.
Yeah, he had a knee injury. It was a bit of a scare more than it was an injury. There was no structural damage, but he hurt his knee in the Thursday night game on TNT when they went to Cleveland. Cleveland blew out Miami in that game. I think Miami, even though they're at the eighth spot and they're kind of like dangling, I do think Miami is a playoff team. Even without Chris Bosh, I'd be surprised if they don't make the playoffs.
Well, with Dragic alone, they should fend off everyone else.
Yeah.
Because just based on, you know, talent alone, the Celtics, okay, they have struggles. They don't have that superstar. Charlotte, fading fast. You know, Brooklyn's in there. But basically, the good thing about Miami is they're like the Cincinnati Bengals. They just get these reclamation projects and just
rebuild them.
Yes.
Guys like Michael Beasley, Hassan Whiteside, Tyler Johnson,
Birdman. They just get these players who are just like outcasts, and then they're performing, you know, they're getting quality minutes, quality points. It's not just like, okay, we'll sign Walker to a 10-day contract. He'll play 5 minutes, maybe two games. No, he's getting 20 minutes a game. He's getting 8 points. They're putting him out there, and they're doing something.
that's why I think when we try to judge these GMs based on maybe 1 year or maybe 2 years, we kind of go, it's too easy to just say, oh, well, he's a bad GM because he made some bad moves this season. With Pat Riley, you know, a lot of people could easily say, well, anybody could have put together LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade in their primes and won championships, and he didn't even have to go out really fishing for good talent. All he had to do was get a decent role player here and there and win. And in the case of some of these GMs, I guess there is an axe to grind. But Riley kind of had to change a little bit of his game plan when LeBron left. He had to go out and find, like you said, good role players, guys who could fit a niche, and just come in and just provide. And also find guys that can overachieve. And I feel like Miami, I know they're 7 games under 500, but I think they've overachieved.
Well, yeah, but it's, again, to the victor goes the spoils. Look at, like, let's say football, the Cowboys. Nobody's faulting Jerry Jones because he had Aikman and Irvin and Emmitt Smith. Okay, mm-hmm. You're mowing everybody over. Then they leave. You need to adapt. You need to change your strategy. Obviously, the Cowboys didn't do it since they haven't really done much. Mm-hmm. But, yes, Miami is an example of a team that is overachieving right now.
Now, the other ones that are on the outs, because Brooklyn and Miami, as we speak, are in the Eastern Conference playoffs. After that, we talked a little bit about Boston and how they've changed a little bit. I think Brad Stevens is a smart coach, dude. I think he's just a little smarter than the rest of them. He just doesn't have the talent equipped to really fight fire with fire with some of the other teams. The other one, and we mentioned him a little bit about last year's playoff showdown with the Atlanta Hawks, was the Indiana Pacers. Now, the Pacers have kind of changed their game plan, too, because they had anticipated the loss of Paul George to a broken leg. Well, we just got developing news that Paul George is back in the lineup for the Indiana Pacers. This is a little unprecedented. I don't remember a superstar, all-star type of guy coming back to his team this late into the season after not playing almost the entire season earlier.
Yeah, but how much, what percentage is he? How much is he going to provide? Do you really think he's going to be back providing 25 points and, 8 boards and 5 assists?
I think in the first, here's the problem. I think they have, 6 games to go. Their record is 33-43. That means they have 6 games to go. What can you do with 6 games in terms of easing a guy in? They're obviously putting them in there either A, because Paul George and his camp have kind of pushed him to want to play and get some work in before the season is over, or B, the team is pushing it because they think they can get into that last playoff spot. Either way, one way or another, Paul George with his new number, I believe it's number 13?
PG-13.
He's back in the lineup, so obviously, the Pacers are so much better with him. David West will be better to playing alongside Paul George because he doesn't have to take as many of the jump shots. I feel like George Hill and Rodney Stuckey have really found good rhythm as a backcourt now that Lance Stephenson's gone. And their bench this year is so much better than it was last year. Last year, they were one of the worst in the league. This year, they're one of the best. Like you said, it's hard to figure out what Paul George is going to be able to provide. And the problem is they've set themselves up where they have to find something immediately because they only have 6 regular season games to go, and they're on the outside looking in the playoffs about a game and a half out. So how hard do you push Paul George, and what do you expect out of him?
I think it's just more, okay, how about this? This will be answered. I think you can answer this quite easily. Here are their 6 games. Miami, Knicks, Detroit, Oklahoma, Washington, and Memphis.
Okay, it gets hard at the end. And that's where the money's made. That's where we're going to find out who gets the last playoff spots, who gets bounced. But those first 4 games are easily winnable games.
Miami?
I think Miami's a winnable game. I think they're better than Miami.
Okay, we'll say Detroit, New York, easy wins.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma City's fighting for an 8. Washington fighting for a seed still. Mm-hmm. Memphis could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Not the easiest of schedules to come back to.
Memphis has had a bit of a down. This is probably the last we're going to talk about him for this episode, but Memphis has been a little bit down. Do you know why?
Why?
I don't know. You see, I'm asking you too, because I don't know.
I thought it was one of those rhetorical,
Yeah, like I don't even have an answer either. I know they beat Oklahoma City on the Friday game, but it just doesn't feel like they've – I was watching them play Golden State, and they got housed. They played Cleveland, and they got housed. And they played San Antonio, and they got housed. And
I think with them and all these Western teams, they're sort of figuring what seed do we want to be? Mm-hmm. Who would we rather have? What games would we rather go with?
Well, they're in a dogfight with the Rockets right now.
Yeah, they're in the dogfight. You know, they're tied with the Rockets, and you know, two games back is the Clippers and Spurs. So,
mm-hmm.
I think all these teams are sort of like, okay, would you rather be a two or a three? Would you want to be a three or a four? You want to be, you know, who would you want to play? What's your matchup? And I think they're sort of looking ahead to that.
Do you think they're trying to avoid the Spurs?
But you can't avoid anybody in the West. You're avoiding the Spurs by getting the Clippers. Mm-hmm. You're going to avoid the Spurs by getting the Mavericks, who are still dangerous.
Yeah.
The only real safe team is the 8 seed and the Thunder or Pelicans.
Well, if Russell Westbrook goes off, do you think they – you know what? We're going to go back to that. That's a little bit of a tease. We'll go back to that in the next segment. But we're still talking about the Eastern Conference team, so we're going to bounce back over there. We were talking about Indiana and the rest of their schedule. Memphis is one of their last games. You know, that's a pretty tough stretch at the end if you have to play Memphis and Washington. I know that with Paul George, if he plays really well, Indiana could probably beat all of these teams.
They could, but again, like when Durant came back, he looked like he wasn't ready. And I don't expect George to come back at 100%. He'll look rusty. And
yeah, but the problem is, too, with George, and we talked about this in a previous episode when we were talking about George and Derrick Rose. What is the real timetable to come back from a broken leg? I mean, there really is no timetable. It's just how do you feel?
Yeah.
You know, with Kevin Durant, I think hindsight being 2020, I think he rushed it back. And he re-broke his foot. He tried to do a small patchwork type of surgery so that he didn't have to miss as much time. It didn't really help him out that much, and he wound up getting shut down anyway. So, you know, you don't want to rush it back too much. But, you know, the timeline's different for George because a broken leg's more severe than a broken foot. Are you rushing back by trying to come back this late in the season?
If you're rushing back and then trying to fight for an 8 spot, yes. If you want to come back saying, you know what, I can give 20 minutes, I can alleviate some of the stress of these other guys, keep them fresher, let me help out by being that 8, you know, the 8th guy on the bench.
You know what would be neat, though, for George? He could use those 6 games as sort of a tease for all the things he's developed as he's taken time off. Because great players always try to learn new tricks. You know, LeBron even did it with his post-up game. During the lockout, Michael with his fadeaway. I'm not trying to compare Paul George to those players, but Paul George is a great player. Do you think he's going to develop something or show something, maybe a jump shot or more consistent jump shot?
I want to say yes, but what did Derrick Rose develop all of his injuries?
That's true.
And that's what we've talked about many times. We don't know what he's been doing at home.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's tough, too, for George because, you know, it's easy to say, well, you don't want to hurt that leg again, so you might not want to jump as high. It's like, dude, I play basketball. My job is to jump very high. So, you know, with Derrick Rose, you can make the argument, another guy who's going to be probably back for the for the home stretch of the regular season. Now, we don't know when Derrick Rose is coming back, but he's basically gotten the all clear to practice. In the case of Rose, the explosiveness part where he pivots and he goes right to the basket off of his off of those crossovers and all those kind of like start and stops, that's something that he can change. You know, you don't necessarily have to play that way in order to get open. You know, and Rose just refuses to change. I feel like he's kind of done the same thing that he did before, only he's just a step slower. With George, I want to see what he can do because I think he's a little more multi-skilled as at the forward spot than Rose is at the point guard spot. I know it's a little – that might be a bit of a controversial statement, but are you hopping on with that?
Yeah, I'll agree with you.
I mean, maybe defensively a little better. I don't know. It's hard to say because Rose kind of revolutionized the point guard position because he was such an explosive scoring guard. So maybe I'm kind of cheating there. Is Charlotte out of it?
Yeah. The only thing we're hearing from Charlotte is the Lance Stevenson thing, and like they're not. You don't even hear talk of them trying to fight for the 8 seed anymore.
Yeah, he had he's had a few DMPs in a row from Steve Clifford because he hasn't really done well in any of the lineups that Clifford has provided, which gives us the feeling that, which is a nice way of saying I don't want you on the court because you're not helping me.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's such a shame with Lance. I mean, I like Lance. You know, I thought it was going to be a good fit. Maybe in the next week's episode when we talk about, you know, our regular season roundup as we get to the end, we'll talk about whether or not they were the most disappointing team or if Lance was the most disappointing player. I've been hearing that a lot around the Twitter-sphere about how Lance Stevenson is the most disappointing player this season, and it's hard to argue that. But we want to be positive, like we said at the top of the show. Has Charlotte kind of done anything right? You know, maybe the move to get Mo Williams, maybe the fact that they've been really good at not turning the ball over.
I wouldn't say they've done things right or wrong. It's just they've never had expectations ever. They were always a laughingstock of the league. Their drafting has always been god awful, and proved again this year.
Vonleh, yeah, did nothing.
You know, so. This was the first year they were on the map. So for them to be, you know, they were a disappointment, but injuries didn't help. And then, you know, Al Jefferson can't handle the pressure.
He's had his knee drained 3 times in the last 14 days.
Yes.
That means he's probably done for the season.
Exactly. And he's done. The rest of the team is just defense oriented. There's no scores in the team. And, the fact I think they've gotten this far, considering, I don't want to say it's good, but, you know, it's good to see there's a team there and people care.
So you wouldn't call them a disappointment? You would consider them about what they expected them to do?
I didn't expect them to be good anyways. Mm-hmm. I said at the beginning of the year they're going to be horrible. I'm like, how is this team good? It was a fluke.
Are you saying I was wrong?
I'm saying we were both wrong on a lot of things. And
we were young back then. So, you
that
know,
was so episode 1 and 2.
Yeah. So, we talked, we're just getting off of the Final Four in college. So we have basically a Final Four at the bottom of the East, and that it would be Brooklyn, Miami, Boston, and Indiana. Give me, because we might have a bit of more of a calcification at the end of, by the time we get to the next episode next week, give me your 2 and tell me why.
Okay, number 1, it's not going to be the Celtics.
Okay.
I can tell you that because...
Is that reverse psychology?
No, I'm just going to eliminate them easily because in their final 6 games, they have 2 games against Cleveland. Mm-hmm. A game against Toronto. I'm sorry, 2 against Toronto, 2 against Cleveland. Mm-hmm. That's not going to... I don't see them winning any of those.
How did they pull that off, back-to-backs at that end, that late in the season?
Oh, it's back-to-back with Cleveland, and Toronto is... Mm-hmm.
But usually, don't you get splits like that out of the way by the time that you get to the end so that you can play more your division rivals at the end?
Usually, but I guess it's just the way it fell. And I'm like, come on, 2 games against Cleveland, 2 easy losses, you're a half game out, you're not going to battle back with that.
Mm-hmm.
Heat are in. I've already said that. And so now it comes down to Brooklyn and the Pacers. Brooklyn has a 2-game lead and 6 games to go. I'm going to say Brooklyn might be safe.
Would you call them safe right now? They're a game and a half in right now from that play, from that cut line.
Game and a half in. Ooh, 2 against Atlanta.
Yes.
Chicago, Washington, Portland.
That's a murderer's row. Now, they have won 6 games in a row, and that's against good teams. One of them was Toronto. I think they had – I think
They beat Cleveland.
They beat Cleveland, I think, in Brooklyn at Barclays. And that was one of the rare losses for LeBron's team. They haven't lost a lot in the last couple of months.
Yeah, so this is going to be
– I'll tell you what Lionel Hollins did. He went back to the grit and grind. He went back and said, okay, we're going to play defense, we're going to play slow, and we're going to centralize the offense around our stars because we know those are the guys that – not just that they make the most money. It's that these are the guys that can get us the easiest points because they can get to the free throw line. Guys like Johnson, Williams, and Brooke Lopez. And they said, okay, we're going to run everything through Brooke. Darren, you're going to be the point guard. You're going to penetrate. It's not going to be Jared Jack, who's done very well. He's a 6 man, basically. Yeah. And they've done a good job there. You know, I did not expect them to kind of burst out the way they have the last 2 weeks.
With the exception of that Celtics game with Evan Turner getting a triple double, they've been pretty much on fire, and which we, you know, that's what happens with savvy veteran teams. Okay, 2 weeks to go. Now let's hit the on switch.
Okay, my two. I think Miami is safe. I think they're okay. Also, as a side note, though, if they miss the playoffs, I think Eric Spoelstra might be in trouble of losing his job. But that's
I would disagree because nobody can expect a Bosch's thing to happen.
Oh, because the lung infection or whatever it was that he had. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't fire a coach because your best player has a legitimate life condition.
Yeah, but that's kind of the case that everyone says that, well, you can't lose your starting job in the NFL from an injury. Well, that's how it always happens now because everybody gets hurt. You know, it's kind of like you could say the same thing about Monty Williams. You know, well, if Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson, Drew Holiday hadn't had all these injuries, they would have been better. Yeah, well, if my uncle was a girl, he'd be my aunt. You know, it's like. There's a point. It's like, okay, your excuse card is officially empty, you know, and you got to start providing. With Miami, I think they're going to be in because I think Dwayne Wade is going to start playing well in these last few games because Briles is going to motivate him and he knows he's going to need it out of him. I will say that I think the Pacers will make that eighth spot. I don't know why, but I like the vibe from this Pacers team with the defense. With the fact that they're getting more out of their bench and along with Paul George's return, giving them a lot of extra confidence. And they'll be a dangerous team in the playoffs. How dangerous? I don't know. We'll talk about that in a second. In the West, it's this one's going to be easy. It's going to come down to Oklahoma City and New Orleans. Who you got?
I think Oklahoma City has it because New Orleans is always going to get injured.
You think the injury bug will snap on the Pelicans again?
That's what always seems to happen, is they always seem to break that way. And you, I know, have the infinite hope that this will be the year, finally, to get destroyed by Golden State.
Well, I don't know if I have that much hope that they're going to make it. I know I didn't about 2 weeks ago. I felt like 2 weeks ago it was done. I think there was a point where Oklahoma City was four games ahead. And now, all of a sudden, Oklahoma City's dropped a couple in a row. And New Orleans, who's still got a few tough opponents left because they're in the Southwest Division, so they're guaranteed to play at least two playoff teams in the last out of their last six games. It's going to be tough for them, but I'll have to go with Oklahoma City.
Oh, come on. How are you going to give up on your team like that?
Well, how did you give up on your team?
Because my team shouldn't have been in this place to begin with. My team, the Celtics, have the best bench in the NBA.
Hey, guess
the
what?
The problem is their entire team is the bench.
Well, guess what happens when you're a C student in a class full of D students? You're the best student in the class.
All right, here
so
we go.
So you're not going to believe in the Celtics now?
Okay, Pelicans, Portland, Golden State, Memphis, Phoenix, Houston, Minnesota, and San Antonio.
Well, that Minnesota one's a gimme.
That final game that could be the you win you're in is against San Antonio.
The only thing I can say for them is that they've been in the Southwest Division, you know, with Anthony Davis for quite a while now. And I think they might be acclimated to the point that they know that they have good teams in front of them and that they have to play better. The problem is all those teams you listed are all playing for positioning too. Yeah. So they're not in a position where they can drop games, kind of like Atlanta and Golden State are. Golden State's so great that they don't drop games even when they don't play anybody. But that's a tough one for the Pelicans. I know the thing with Oklahoma City is they still got Westbrook. I can guarantee you he'll be the X factor that will win them a game that they shouldn't win, and that'll be the game that gets them ahead and clinches the spot.
Okay.
They're basically playing playoff basketball right now. Do you feel like in these regular season games when you watch them in the between a lot of these Eastern Conference teams and then Oklahoma City and New Orleans, do they feel like playoff games for you?
Oh, just a lot of these games in general. Like I was at the, you mentioned the Milwaukee Celtics game. That was a very chippy game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, whoa, where, you know, where is all this emotion coming from? This is, you know, who now, cares?
Do you mean from the crowd or from the players?
From both. The crowd was into it. The players were into it. Marcus Smart, you know, although he's garbage, you know, he was, you know, getting under the skin of Giannis. And
hey, he was Rookie of the Month in February.
How? Did all the other rookies take time off?
Well, that's the East, where Nikola Mirotic, he was a good player. He's been Rookie of the Month twice. That just goes to show you.
Yeah, okay, Oklahoma City, yeah, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Houston, San Antonio, Sacramento, Indiana, Portland, and Minnesota.
Okay, and now we're going to get to maybe the crux of the episode here, and that's going to be how do we feel the number one seeds who have already clinched, the only ones who have clinched so far in their playoff positioning, how they will do against the respective opponents in their conference. Since we were just talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, we'll start with them because if they get that eighth spot, which they would be stuck with if they get in the playoffs, I don't think they can move any higher. I don't see Dallas dropping down. They would be playing the number one seed in the Western Conference, that's the Golden State Warriors. Let's just start there. How do you think Oklahoma City – how dangerous of a team is Oklahoma City for the Golden State Warriors?
Not very.
Not even with Westbrook, the mascot.
Nope. Nope. How dangerous is Oklahoma City against Houston? Not very.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Memphis will give them trouble. Portland I've never been high on. Clippers I think would destroy Oklahoma City. The Spurs, I think, could even handle Oklahoma City.
Oh, for sure. I think the one team that would give them trouble, that Oklahoma City could really battle with, is Dallas. Because of the fact that Dallas has such a bad defense, and their chemistry has been off. Kind of like Oklahoma City's. Yeah. So, you know, chemistry is huge in these games. You know, it is huge. You got to be very well-tuned, and you got to at least have a really sound game plan when you get into the playoffs against the opponent. Because you're playing the same team over and over and over and over again. You know, you got to have everything. You got to have all your ducks in a row. With Oklahoma City, it just doesn't feel like they do. You know, the only duck they have in a row is Russell, and he's a killer duck. So that's the one benefit they have. They have the one guy that could just take over a game.
Yeah, but like I said, he'll give you 8 turnovers.
Mm-hmm. And
that's
the problem,
not dominating the game if you're just, you know, really just going in and going, it's me. I don't care. I'm just going to run in and hope I get a foul. If not, take the ball.
And the problem with Golden State is they have two guys that can take over a game, in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry.
Yep.
We'll do this as a tease for the next episode, Steph Curry versus James Harden and Russell Westbrook if you want to throw him in. Do you feel like that competition is still very, very close for the league MVP?
I still got to give it to Harden.
That's going to make an interesting episode next week.
I've said that from that was my prediction from the get-go, and I'm like, you know, the fact that, you know, Dwight Howard's been out and he's still like nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just business as usual.
Since we're talking about James Harden, that's the 2 seed right now because they're duking it out with Memphis. Golden State versus Houston, if it happened in, say, the Western Conference Finals, how would that go?
I think Golden State has the West because the way the West is, it takes hell to get to the finals. Because,
mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say Houston is the 2 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, okay, you got to go through the Spurs. After the Spurs, you got to go through Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to go. It's like you've already been destroyed before you even get to
the
finals.
You've been through the gauntlet. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But you know, some teams, they'll say that makes them stronger. A lot of people would have said that about the Rockets in 95 when they were like, a 7 seed? And they played the Utah Jazz, who were a 60-win team, beat them, played a great Phoenix Suns team, beat them in 7 games. Then they played the Spurs when David Robinson was the MVP, beat them. And they were so battle-tested that by the time they got and played Penny and Shaq in the finals, that they were just like, huh, we played teams this good all season, you know, and they swept them. Do you think that lends to that theory that it builds you up as you play tougher teams down the road in the playoffs?
The problem is every team is equally as tough now. It's not like back then where you had that tough, okay, it was a tough gauntlet, but here every team could sort of make that speech that this could be us.
Mm-hmm. So Houston, you think they could be a bit of a threat for Golden State? You said probably not.
That's probably the closest thing. I still say the Clippers if they get their act together because
– Well, Golden State has that really chip. You talk about chippiness. I mean, it's beyond chippy with the Clippers. They just don't like each other.
Yeah, so that's what I'm like. Clippers, if they sort of realize, figure what they're doing, the Clippers can be very dangerous to Golden State. And I would say Houston, other than that, not really.
Well, Golden State swept Houston, but some of the games were not competitive in the third after the third quarter because Curry would just go off. He just has Curry. I don't know. Everyone talks about how he doesn't play in the fourth quarter, and that kind of goes against him with his MVP ranking. But I think people should look at his third quarter stats and look at how dominant Curry is trying to close people out. He's so good that he can close teams out in the third quarter instead of the fourth.
Yeah, and like we said, you know, Dwight Howard's been injured. They're a completely different team with him in there.
That's true, too. You know, that might be another example, like we were talking about with Paul George, where it's kind of unprecedented, a superstar player coming in that late in the season. With Dwight Howard, he's doing the same thing, but I don't know if Dwight Howard is, like, the superstar on this team anymore.
He's not, but they still have to account for him.
Yeah, because of the rebounding and the block shots, mm-hmm. which he alone can turn your team into an elite rebounding and shot blocking team. The Memphis Grizzlies, I think, have the perfect formula to beat Golden State if they play them.
Memphis Grizzlies?
Yes, because of the defense and because of the fact that they have a very strong rotation and they know what they're good at. I think that their identity and their consistency would be able to battle Golden State for a 5-6-7 game series. I think they'd be able to do it.
But Memphis has to get through Dallas. They have to get through Houston.
Yeah.
If it was a round one, I might be a little worried, but
it would be in the conference finals that they would play Golden State.
Yeah, it's not. They have to get through a lot of tough teams first.
Portland, you're down on. Is it because of the Wesley Matthews injury, or do you see some other reason why they wouldn't be able to?
Well, I never thought they were strong to begin with, but with Wesley Matthews, you know, you have a follow, but now you have no bench.
Mm hmm.
So you
one of the worst benches in the league.
So you need a bench, and how are you gonna? I don't see them competing without a bench.
Yeah, Golden State has one of the best benches in the league. I mean, their metrics are so good across the board that they're being compared with the 1995-1996 Chicago Bulls because they're pointing at a lot of different things. They're looking at the points, the winning margin, which is 10.8 points. That's the highest since that team. That when we talk about the 95-96 Bulls, for the people who are not totally in the know, they went 72-10 in the regular season. They only lost, I believe, three games in the playoffs to win an NBA championship. Pretty much known as the greatest team in the history of the NBA basketball in one season. So they're getting a lot of comparisons because they have only two losses at home, which is actually better than the Bulls did. The only team that's done that, I believe, was the 1986 Boston Celtics that also won a championship. Every team with a point margin of over 10, like Golden State has, all of them have either gotten to the finals or won an NBA championship. So let me ask you this. Do you think that it's even more impressive that the Warriors have done this because of the fact that they're in a conference with so many more competitive teams and so many more teams that have elite that are elite in their own ways? Or do you think that the Bulls were more impressive because they were so much better than everybody else that every team marked their calendar for the Bulls game as their biggest game of the season?
Well, I'd say the Bulls because it was also, you know, Golden State's more of a complete team. And also, it's not like we didn't expect Golden State to be good, period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, well, how they should have been fighting for a sixth seed. How are they?
When we did our preview, we knew they would be good. We just didn't know how good. You know, yeah, that's the surprise.
It was just they're going to go as far as Curry's going to take them, and he's been taking them.
Yeah, it's like with the Bulls when they went in. I think after they signed Rodman, I think everyone knew, okay, this team's going to be really hard to beat because Michael's going to get a full season under his belt. Pippen is still an all-time player, and Rodman is a rebounding machine. Who's going to stop him? And you got Phil, and you got Tony Kukoc. You know, with this team, it was a little bit of a surprise, but I think people have settled into the point that they've already kind of recognized, and even a lot of players in the league, if you would honestly ask them, realize that Golden State is the best team in the league.
Yeah.
The other one, obviously, hanging out there at the 6th seed, 7th seed, maybe a 5th seed, maybe a 4th seed. Who knows by the time you hear this? San Antonio. Do you think that they could do it against Golden State?
The sad thing is you can never count them out. It's just they haven't looked. You're always like, oh, this is it. They're starting to make their run. It's just like then they have like a bad loss. It's just like I don't see them this year doing it.
That is a bold decision to make on your part to say that this isn't the year, though, because they're always in it. And every time they get a tough challenge, they're always ready.
They are, but they haven't turned that corner yet. Mm-hmm. We keep waiting for them to do it. It was supposed to be that, and then they started winning some games. Like, yeah, yeah. Then comes some really bad loss, then mediocre performance. And it's just like, maybe they just are a sixth seed this year.
Do you kind of see a Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali situation? You know, old. You know, if you know what I'm talking about, when Ali was really old, he fought Larry Holmes in the 80s, and it was an embarrassment. Holmes just destroyed him. Do you think that we might see something like that? Somebody talked to me and asked me about that and said that the Spurs would get destroyed kind of in a similar way. Do you feel the same way if the Spurs played the Warriors out? Do you feel like it would be kind of like a passing of the torch almost?
I don't think they get destroyed, but I don't see, like, I wouldn't see it going seven games.
Mm-hmm. That would be a bit of a blowout for the Spurs, because they wouldn't, if they don't go six games or seven games, then you get the sense that, okay, well, this wasn't competitive. Because that's how, you know, that history's written by the winners. And that's how history would write it as. If it's a five-game series, they're not going to look at how close the games were. They're just going to look at the how many games did you win, how many games did you lose. And if the Warriors beat them 4-1, it's kind of like, oh, okay. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. Miami. You know, I don't. That series was not competitive after their trip to Miami, when San Antonio kind of like blew the doors off of them. But it was pretty competitive after the first two or three games. And, you know, but the fact that they beat them 4-1 made it look like it wasn't a competitive series. But that was a very even series when they went into it.
But like I said, in the end, people don't care about the score. They just want to see what the final result was.
Okay, and now we're going to go to the Atlanta Hawks, who have clinched the one seed in the East. Now, we might do this a little bit more rapid fire because there's more teams in the running. So this one's going to be... it's going to be a bigger batch that we're going to be talking about. And we're going to go to the bottom here for teams that are competitive. And I'll even throw them in there just in case that they make a run. Charlotte Hornets, do you think that they could be competitive with the Atlanta Hawks?
No. You know, I could answer – I could just, you know, save you a few steps by saying I don't think the Atlanta Hawks will go to the finals.
Oh, controversial.
I don't – you know, with Golden State, it was just a war of attrition to get to them. Here, I don't see Atlanta, you know, taking down LeBron or taking down Chicago. Whoever comes out of that, I see them just steamrolling Atlanta.
Do you think Indiana could be competitive with them, with Paul George, if they got that 8th spot?
If George is healthy, and he's 100%, and he was Paul George of last year,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're dangerous.
It'd be a weird role reversal, too, because if the 1 and the 8 would be flipped.
I can see them being dangerous. You know, the Heat, unfortunately, not so much. Brooklyn, not so much. You know, Milwaukee, they're just happy to be a part of the party.
You think Milwaukee will win a single game in the playoffs?
They could win one at home, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
A confidence booster.
I can see them winning, yeah, like a game 3 or a game 4.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be like, you know, look, we did.
Yeah, we didn't totally give up, you know.
Washington, I used to think like they could give them trouble, but I don't know what's up. Washington has not been the same.
I think they have an advantage in this way. John Wall is definitely better than Jeff Teague. And I do think that their bigs are better bruisers than Atlanta's. You know, Atlanta's not a very big team, and they're not a good rebounding team. And that's how Washington beat the Bulls. They out-rebounded them last year in the playoffs.
Well, that's what it comes down to. In the playoffs, it's just bully basketball. You can shoot all the threes you want, but you know, you're going to fight for every rebound. You're going to fight down in the paint. So Atlanta's not built for that. They're just built for shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to happen when somebody's just elbowing you. You know, give a hard foul here and there because, okay, now the game's a little different.
We're talking about all these different teams, and some of them are not as strong in the East as the ones at the top that we're going to about to discuss. But what makes the Atlanta Hawks so good? Just kind of in a roundup, like, what makes them so good?
Shooting.
And sharing the ball?
That's just ball movement and shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, aren't they dead last in rebounding? Or like 29th, maybe?
They're near the bottom.
So, yeah, they're just shooting threes. They're just going to keep passing the ball, Harlem Globetrotter style, till they find that open guy. Okay, hit your three.
Mm-hmm. Their scoring defense is actually not that bad. You know, they're actually in the top 10 in defense in terms of points allowed. Because they're able to – here's the thing that's really cool about them. They're able to hit all these threes and share the ball and have great ball movement, but they don't have to play fast. You know, but they – so they can slow you down and still get to 100 points.
Yeah.
You know, they're sort of the – they're calling them the Spurs of the East. I kind of see them like the Warriors of the East. You know, they're, and not just in terms of record, in terms of style of play. Obviously – the Warriors' best players are definitely better than the Hawks' best players, and their bench is a lot better. But I feel like the Hawks' bench is pretty good, and their starting lineup is so well-tuned. Like, they just – it's hard – once you take one – if you try to take Horford out with a double team, you know, you got Kyle Korver open. If you try to double team Korver, you got Jeff Teague on the penetration. It's just it's very hard to stop them when their starting lineup gets into a groove. If their starting lineup doesn't make shots, though, I could see a team like Indiana giving them trouble. I could see a team like Washington, who's defensively predicated, give them trouble. I don't see Toronto giving them trouble because Toronto's defense is so bad.
They just don't have anything. Yeah. They didn't – Toronto, like we said, but they sort of peaked and they got as far as they could get. The thing with Atlanta is – you kind of need, you know, I think the key to success in the playoffs is you need to let Al Horford beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, go ahead, take every little layup and dunk you want. We're just going to shut down the outside.
Yeah, it becomes hero ball. You have to force them into hero ball.
Yeah, and just, you know, I don't see Atlanta getting out of it.
Mm-hmm. Chicago, if they happen to get through that second round potential matchup with Cleveland, what would they do against Atlanta?
I think they could beat Atlanta.
But do you think Cleveland is a stronger candidate to beat Atlanta than Chicago?
Yes, because I think Cleveland could beat – well, I think both Cleveland and Chicago could beat Atlanta. I think Atlanta's third in my list.
Do you think Derrick Rose being there makes it more likely or less likely that they will beat the Hawks?
I think it's irrelevant. Well, it depends. If Derrick Rose wants to be the hero, mm-hmm. it'll hurt them mm-hmm. because he doesn't have it. If he's willing to be like, you know what, let me help my team. Let me do what I can. I have 6 fouls. I have some speed. I have good court vision. Let me utilize my resources. Yes, he's going to be beneficial.
And then, obviously, there's Cleveland there. I think they've only lost 7 games since, like, mid-January. I don't know if that's the best record so far since then. I know there's a couple of other teams that have been streaking lately, but Cleveland has just been – basically, Cleveland hit their stride right when they needed to.
Yep.
And now everything is kind of coming into form for them because they found the chemistry with their new additions with Mozgov and Shumpert and Smith. LeBron is LeBron. He doesn't look like – whatever was ailing him before – right around Christmas time or the new year, whatever it was that was nagging at him, whether it was a knee problem or whatnot, he's 100%. He's playing great. He's playing through the system. It seems like he's listening to what David Blatt offers, even though there was a report that LeBron basically runs all the plays. Like, that's a big shock.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think, did it really shock you when you heard that a star player for a team runs the plays?
Oh, no. You know, the star player calls off the coach. That never happens in any sport. No, that's crazy.
You know, it's like, and David Blatt was like the coach of the month. It's like, yeah, well, good job, David. I mean, it's not like you really had to do much. I mean, I'm not trying to, like, shoot down David Blatt. I think he's important to, like, show the role players. I think he's been very instrumental in trying to get Kevin Love kind of back into the groove of the offense. But I think with Irving, who we haven't talked about at all, and LeBron, it just seems like they're in such a good place in terms of their balance and in terms of when they know one guy needs to take all the shots depending on mismatches and when LeBron needs to take over. And it seems like they've found a very good flow there. You know, whether or not that's going to be the determining factor against the Atlanta Hawks, the star power, against a team like Atlanta who hasn't had a 30-point scorer the entire season, which is unreal, that we will see. And with Chicago – they're a tough team, but I worry about their defense. There's all the chirping about Tom Thibodeau maybe being on the outs. And then there's the Derrick Rose questions, you know, which I think Derrick Rose should just have a giant question mark on the back of his jersey for the rest of the season. It's like every time we talk about Derrick Rose, it ends with a question mark, you know?
Pretty much. Well, it's, you know, again, I think he needs to decide what kind of player he wants to be.
Yeah, and, you know, with Paul George, maybe he doesn't have enough time to make that decision or to show what he can do at the end of this season. But I think we might get a little bit of a hint as to what we're going to see out of Paul George. You know, kind of, it's weird. It's almost like, you know, with it's like Michael did it twice. Michael came back late in the season in 86. He got into the playoffs and they didn't go far, but he had the 63-point game. And then he came back from baseball about 3 weeks before the season ended and he played well, but he didn't look great. Now, Paul George is no Michael Jordan, but Paul George is way better than a lot of the other players that we're talking about right now. So I think he could be a big, big impact player for the Pacers and how they do in the playoffs if he really plays well and if the Pacers kind of get that reinvigoration from it. But it's really tough to just kind of snatch that kind of momentum when you're this deep into the playoff race and everybody's trying to get momentum.
Yeah, that's when it's all just jockeying for position now.
Yeah, and we're all jockeying for position for the playoff spot, and we're going to know a whole lot more by the time we get to the next episode. And we might be giving out some regular season awards. I think me and Adam have already talked about a couple, and we might not be in total agreement on some, which might make for some very fun debate. But I hope everybody enjoys the games, and I'm glad everybody's back in the fold here. And as we get towards the playoffs, I think things are going to get more exciting. Adam, are you more excited about the regular season now that we're getting to the end finally? Because the regular season gets the stamp like it's not important. But once you get to April, I mean, these games can become very important.
Well, you can say that, like, you know, the regular season is important. But now, like you said, these games are important. And the fact, you know, you blew that game at Orlando back in December. Okay, now you're a half game behind because, you know, you decided not to show up for one easy victory. Mm-hmm. So those past mistakes are coming back to hurt you a little bit.
They do. They do. And, you know, but it's kind of like that old argument, like, well, if that call early in the game had been called the other way, like it should have been, then we would have won. It's like, well, you can't say that, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, and maybe we can kind of coincide this with, you know, since we're obviously on Place to Be Nation. Did you watch any of the big show that they always that they were focused on, the WrestleMania show?
No, I heard it happened again this year. something, I guess, around this time.
Well, you know, I thought the show was okay, but what happened is it had a very strong finish. And I think that, I don't know, maybe it's like movies. You know, if you have a great ending to a movie, people kind of walk out kind of like on their tippy toes, like, oh, wow, I can't believe they did that. Or that was a really creative decision. And I like that movie a lot more than I thought I did. And with the regular season, it's the same. It's always about the teams that finish the strongest, you know?
Yep.
And so
the only thing you get remembered for is whether you backed into the playoffs or you went in going 8-2.
Nobody cares how you played in November or December.
Exactly.
And nobody cares about the games you dropped in November and December. They only care if you get like one game short and you kind of second guess, like you were saying, you second guess yourself on whether or not you could have won that one, you couldn't have won that one, and it's like, you know. But well, hopefully we were finishing strong for this episode, but we will be back. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys, and enjoy all the games.